Well, hello everybody and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show, streaming live from BBS in California and syndicating to over 100 stations globally, including iHeart, iTunes, and also popping up on the Podopolo podcasting platform, a socially interactive podcasting platform, a new tool. I am your host, Yvonne E.L. Silver. If you haven't tuned in before, I'm interviewing today a very impressive woman, Jennifer Menard Shand, who I'll formally introduce in just a moment. And I love sharing stories. I'm passionately sharing these stories of women who have risen from typically some sort of tragedy to triumph and are now out in the world doing amazing things. Many of them have a mission-inspired focus or have an impact-based business, as Jennifer does. And these are stories that are worth sharing. So if you're listening and you're in a place where you're wondering if you're ever going to get out of it, these are the stories to listen to for uplifting the spirit of humanity, which is my role. So I'm by training, I'm a certified executive coach, a best-selling author, speaker, and mentor. And I work with mission-inspired social enterprise ladies who are ready to step up from being a solopreneur to a CEO. So typically six-figure women who are ready to expand and grow. And sometimes that means adding staff. And we're going to get into that conversation today, learning more about Jennifer. So hello, Jennifer, and welcome.
Thank you, Yvonne. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great that we were able to finally get this booked. So Jennifer, if you have not had a chance to read her bio, Jennifer is the CEO and director and founder of Client Happiness, love that, the Staff Shop. As a Canadian Indigenous women-owned business and award-winning diverse supplier, certified with CCAB, CAMSC, WBE, and We Connect, Staff Shop is an incredible organization that provides North American support with temporary contract and direct hire staffing, payroll services, placing new Canadian immigrants, which is so important, essential resources, security services, PPE, that's probably a new service, cleaning and disinfecting, and also working with different organizations with affiliate referral programs, et cetera. So a very well-rounded business making a massive impact, especially when we're adding jobs and hiring people who may or may not be coming from immigrant backgrounds. Herself, she's a French-Canadian woman, an entrepreneur, and she has a really interesting story. I don't want to ruin the surprise. So welcome, Jennifer. So glad to have your expertise on this show. As a French-Canadian woman, as an Indigenous woman, and also as a business owner with some really interesting life experiences to bring to the table and to share. So hello and welcome.
Thank you. That was a great intro. Appreciate it.
So I'm interested, if you can start, let's share more about your personal story to give the audience listeners some context. As I understand, it's a really interesting one and it has some many twists and turns. And when I started reading your bio, I was clutching my chest. So I don't know why this is being so annoying with my phone. Let me just make sure that's turned right off.
Yeah, I had to turn it off.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Yes, it's an interesting story. It's turned out to be a great one. So I'm very blessed. But I grew up in Northern Ontario, Canada. As you mentioned, I'm French Canadian Ojibwe. So First Nations Ojibwe. And my dad is from Quebec. That's the French part in me. And my mother is from Northern Ontario. And our tribe per se is on Manitoulin Island up north. It's a beautiful island. And I grew up spending a lot of summers there. And I would say that the majority of my childhood in the beginning was really great. My parents were together. I had a lot of friends, and I just remember our household being a happy one until my parents got divorced when I was seven. And so, like many other people I know, especially being that age, your parents getting divorced is just not the news you want to hear. It is a significant event that I remember. I remember having a headache that day, and I remember looking at the empty house and not really understanding how this could be happening, and maybe I could jump in and do something to help. And I think that's where my will to want to jump in and solve problems began at a very young age. I thought there must be something I can do to change this outcome. And so my mom ended up with full custody of me. So I only saw my dad every second weekend, which was tough. He ended up remarrying, and I ended up with a stepmother and two stepsisters. And so that was also an interesting transition. There's always challenges that come with step-parents, and we have a great relationship now, but at that age, that was a challenge in itself. I just didn't want my dad to be with anyone else other than my mom. And my mother ended up with a string of people that just weren't right for her, weren't the right fit. And one of them ended up really abusing her quite a bit, verbally, physically, for many years. He ended up being my stepfather. And I would say by the time I was 10 or 11 until the age 18, that's when I was really kind of living a pretty volatile life. There was a lot of domestic violence going on, a lot of abuse, towards my mother. And for me as a child, I spent the majority of my teens, I guess, trying to save my mother, while only seeing my dad every second weekend. So he wasn't really aware of what was going on or to the extent of what was going on. And through that experience, things kind of shifted in a sense where I became, or I felt like I was the parent and she was the child. In the beginning, I was either jumping into their fights, or I was calling the police to come have him taken away, or I was moderating some of their fights. Sometimes they would ask me to come downstairs and listen to whoever was right or wrong at like 2 or 3 in the morning. And so I would have to kind of go through these situations. And unfortunately, my mom would always take him back. And so she was stuck in this cycle where we would succeed in perhaps maybe getting him out of the picture for a bit. But by the time the court dates rolled around, I would have to either change the story because he was still home, or she had taken him back, or I would end up being maybe gifted or rewarded for pretending like it didn't happen. And so this went on for years. And there are some nights where I had to actually run to the neighbor's house and knock on the door and ask them to use the phone, which was one of the most embarrassing times. I still remember kind of the look of shock on their face, opening the door at 2 or 3 a.m. and I'm there kind of, can I use your phone? And those types of moments are the ones that kind of stick in my head. And from that, I ended up shifting from wanting to save her to really giving her an ultimatum and letting her know, you know, it's either me or this guy. And she just couldn't get out of it. So I do remember my love and my respect kind of melting away at that point. I remember kind of changing myself as a child. And there was this went on so often that there's so many stories I could tell, but there's a few that stick out. And the one that I've been chatting about on other podcasts like Tony Chapman's or in other stories is the one key incident where I ended up having to point a knife at my stepfather to save her one of the nights, because this time I had heard a fight going on downstairs, and I heard beer bottles smashing on the floor. And so I ran down to see what was going on. And she was on the floor with glass in her chest. She was bleeding. He was over her. And he was going to keep beating on her. And I remember, I was 13 at the time. I remember him being really afraid of knives for some reason. He wasn't afraid of guns or anything else, but he had this phobia of knives. And I for some reason, just thought of that in that moment, looked at the butcher knives in the kitchen and grabbed one and just pointed it at him. And thank God I didn't have to do more than that. Not really sure what I would have done, but it was an attempt to just get him off of her. And he did actually jump off and crouch into the corner with a look of shock and horror, because none of us could believe that I actually had to get to that point. And luckily I never had to do something like that again. But that's an example of some of the things that went on in my household.
Mm. And so when you were age 13, that incident happened?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I was reading that in your bio with your mother on the floor with broken glass pressed into her chest. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, right? You know, would that be the night that you would be able to make a difference or not? So the cycle of abuse continued?
It did. And what ended up happening is I almost got used to it. And I got to a point where I felt like, well, if you're going to stay with someone who does this to you, then you deserve to be abused. I had no, I was very angry with her after a few years. And that's what kind of propelled me to then wander down my own dark paths, and just started with, you know, not really having any, walking away from God, first off, not really having any faith, even though I used to pray, and actually he, now looking back, used to help me in certain situations. But I became almost a mission of survival of like, you know what, if she can't take care of herself or me, I guess I'm going to have to figure this out on my own. I didn't really want to bother my dad with it because he's such a light. His name is Noel. He was born on Christmas Day, and mm-hmm. just the nicest man ever. And it sounds weird, but I kind of wanted to shelter him or protect him from it. I didn't want to spend my time, the only time I had with him, really talking about that. So it sounds silly now as an adult saying that, but that kind of propelled me to, you know, hang out the wrong crowd, get into the alcohol and the drugs, and just doing petty things that weren't really helpful. One of the salvations was really making sure that I had good grades and working hard. There's something in me that always said, you know, if you do well at school, and if you work hard, that is your ticket out, or one of the tickets out of this. It's represented freedom. And so luckily through this mess, I never really missed school. I was very passionate about school and good grades, and started working at a young age. As soon as I was 15, I had a side job. And so that helped quite a bit. There was a time where I actually did get up and leave and go move with my dad, because at a certain age, you're allowed to decide which parent you want to live with.
Right.
And he came to pick me up in the middle of the night after yet another issue. And that was the beginning of my healing with him, my stepmother, and my two stepsisters. And I stayed there for a few years, and I didn't talk to my mother for a while. And then 9/11, out of all days, rolled around. And she ended up getting in a car accident with my grandmother, who unfortunately passed in the car accident. But I had got home that day, and my dad said, Jen, you know, we've got to go to the hospital. Something's happened to your mother. And I thought she had passed as well. So I do remember praying that day and being like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll talk to her again. Like, please make sure she's alive. And I ended up getting to the hospital and realizing that it was in fact my grandmother who had passed, not my mom. So I almost felt at that moment that, you know, I might have another chance at this. Let's see if we can work something out. And because she was in pretty bad shape, she had broken almost every bone in her body in this accident, this head-on collision. I went back to live with her. She bought me a car, and I wanted to go back to try and maybe take care of her and see if I can, you know, fix this relationship. And I had two conditions, and they were no more alcohol and no more fights, because she was still with my stepfather at the time, who, by the way, was bipolar. And you could really see the shift when he would get angry. He had these light green eyes, and they would turn gray or dark gray. And you started seeing the shift in my mom as well. She used to be very kind of soft-spoken, would not swear, just a really, really nice kind of happy person. And over the years, you could see that she started acting and behaving like him. So by the time I went back there, unfortunately, the fights and the alcohol didn't stop up until the point where I was 18. And there was another incident where I think she had asked me to come help her get him out of another bar fight or some sort of issue at the bar. And I refused to because I was studying for exams. I was tired. And we got into a fight. She had been drinking and she said, get out. And she kicked me out of the house at 18 years old. Had to pack my car and drive to a friend's house. And that's when I began my journey on my own. I started living alone from that age. Still, I was up north at that time. And then I ended up moving to Toronto when I was 20. Again, I wasn't speaking to my mother at the time. As you can imagine, I was angrier than ever.
I imagine so.
And again, it was about survival at that point. So I poured myself into work. And this is what I refer to as being a workaholic for some time. I really made my mark in hospitality, ended up landing a job with Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, which I still technically kind of do on the side. And then I met my mentor in 2017-ish, Jeff Bagg, the owner of a staffing firm called the Bagg Group that had been around since, you know, 1971, family-owned business. Yeah. And he was one of the club members in the restaurant that I work at MLSE for the hockey games and basketball games and concerts. And go figure, it's funny how life works, because my boss at the time had said, you know, Jen, you've got to go fix this issue with this table. The last time this club member was in, someone messed up his order or his table. He's not happy. We've got to turn this around. And me being the fixer-upper that I am, I was like, yeah, sure, no problem. Let me go figure this out. And ended up obviously making some sort of impression, because he had asked me at the time if I had ever thought about working in staffing and if I was looking for a job. And I didn't even know what a staffing firm was. I literally had to Google it, because coming from where I grew up, we don't really have many staffing firms around. We find our own jobs, and just didn't make sense to me. I was also in school at the time. I was in dental school, kind of testing out the idea of maybe becoming a dentist. It was an idea that was planted in my head by my mother. And she said that, you know, be a good career. And I was kind of testing that out. And so I kind of brushed Jeff off at the time and said, you know, no, I'm in school and not interested, but I'll let you know. And sure enough, a year goes by. I graduate with honors. I work in the dental field for about 3 months, and then realize that, my gosh, I've made like a horrible mistake here, because no offense to the industry, but I was under a mask and gloves every day, not able to talk to people. It was just not who I was. And so I remember talking to my brother at the time, which, by the way, is a whole other story. My parents actually had a child before me, about almost 8 years before me. And that was my brother. And because they were so young, they decided to put him up for adoption, probably from pressure that they had within the family. And then that pressure changed and they tried to get him back 6 months later and unfortunately couldn't. And so I actually have a real biological brother that I did not meet until later on in life. Okay. And so that's a great story. I mean, it's a beautiful kind of story of reconnecting, and all of the families now know each other, the adoptive parents and everyone ended up kind of reuniting. So kind of a side story, but FYI, at the time, I called my brother and he's like, what about that Jeff Bagg guy that you met in the club and this opportunity that he presented? And I said, you know what, I blew him off. It's been a year. I lost his business card. I'd have to wait until he comes back in. And fate had it, he came back into the club the next day.
Of course he did. The universe is doing its magic.
Right. And so I, of course, go to him, tail between my legs. I'm like, Jeff, I lost your business card. I'm sorry. Like, can we go on that lunch that you had asked me to about a year ago? And he's just shaking his head, but he's like, yeah, sure. And so we went to lunch, we exchanged life stories and my vision. My vision was to, of course, at that age, I was in my early 20s. My vision was very materialistic like, but it was to make a certain amount of money, drive a certain type of car, travel around, et cetera. He's like, you know what? I think I can get you there. And I think you have what it takes in this industry, which turned out to be true. Hospitality and staffing, I mean, they go hand in hand. Your product and service is really centered around people. And so I tried it out. He said, if it doesn't work, let me know. And it's all good. But I think there's something here. And so in 2008, I would say between 2008 to 2018 is where I really made my mark in staffing. And I held various positions, moved up through the ranks and worked in almost every department and position that there was. And while I was at the Bag Group, I ended up creating a division within that company, and it was hospitality and event staffing focused, go figure. And at the end of 2018, Jeff ended up giving me the opportunity to purchase the division that I created, and I did, and I renamed it Staff Shop. I know, it was fun.
Hard work pays off.
Exactly. And he, and then he sold his company. He was working on his succession plan. And then we ended up really expanding further than Ontario. We ended up working in a few different Canadian provinces and ended up with a couple clients in the US and the Caribbean. And I had really focused on that niche. And of course, the pandemic rolls around. So we're rocking and rolling. We're growing. And then the pandemic rolls around and just completely closes the curtain on this niche that I had chosen, because the Bag Group was... The Bag Group was a full service staffing firm. They did not just operate in one industry. And so luckily, because of that, I went back to my roots, and there was no real reason why I couldn't operate in other industries. I had just chosen hospitality as a focus. But that's part of the reason why we were able to quickly pivot to staffing essential services and really becoming more of the full service firm that I'm used to working at. And so we grew from 4 to 8 service lines now. We are in all 10 Canadian provinces. We have a couple of clients still in the US and the Caribbean. Caribbean's my favorite place. I'm looking to expand that. And I would love to actually focus on global expansion with regards to events. I still love staffing events. I love to be part of memorable experiences. And so along the way, I met my business partner, Allison, my COO today, and I met my husband through this time in and around the same time that I bought the business. And I'm now pregnant and due September 25th, little girl, I just found out.
Congratulations.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I think, you know, long story short, my story is still unfolding. I'm 36 now, I'll be 37 September. And I have to say and give credit to a few things. I mean, the hard work obviously definitely paid off, but it didn't just stop there. I think the being a workaholic alone and having a vision board filled with materialistic things is not... That's not enough, because when I ended up turning 30, I looked at my vision board and I'm like, okay, so I got the 6-figure salary. I have a fancy car. I have the wardrobe. I have all these things, and there's something missing.
Oh, I've been there.
And I started panicking, like, I better change this vision board real quick because this isn't working for me. And I had also panicked because I hadn't thought further than that. I had only, like, that's it. I had reached the top of the mountain. And so I really surrounded myself with a lot of good people along the way. I mean, people like Jeff in the corporate world helped me do that by default. I had a lot of mentors and really always leaned into my relationships and leveraged those relationships in the right way. I also was in therapy for many, many years and still have my therapist close by. The therapy that worked for me the most was called EMDR. It's a great therapy for PTSD and just for some of the issues that I had gone through. So it's just an FYI for people, because not every type of therapy or therapist works. Yeah. And it's important to kind of shift gears if it's not working, instead of giving up. But I have to say, I did not truly start healing from the inside out until I reconnected with my Christian faith. Mm-hmm. I actually grew up Catholic, but reconnected on the Christian church side of things. And that was probably early 30s. That's really when things started to kind of melt away for me. And I have so many examples. That's a whole other podcast on faith. But I have to say, like, that's the type of healing that allowed me to heal from the inside out, to be more vulnerable, to actually have humility, to not be obsessed with being a perfectionist, which, you know, I suffered from imposter syndrome for a while. I like to say that God has the power to heal faster than decades of therapy, because that was the fastest healing. Well, and it still is to this day. Yeah.
Well, this really is a story about, you know, faith and passion and freedom. So when we titled it, you know, "The Devil Tried to Conquer Me and Lost," clearly he lost. And yeah. What you're sharing is something very similar to, I think, a lot of people, especially women in their early 30s, have that, "Is this all there is to life?" moment. And I also had it again in my 40s. I remember standing at a real estate investment convention, and at the time, the favorite question, instead of, you know, "Hi, what do you do?" because we all knew that we were real estate investors in that room, was, you know, "How many doors do you have? You know, how many units are you renting?" And I remember after about 5 different people coming up and asking me, it was like, "You know what? Don't ask me anymore. I don't care how many doors I have, because I'm not happy. Like, my soul is not feeling nourished," because at that time I had broken up with my ex-husband, was not seeing anybody. And at that time was feeling like I'm losing my purpose. Yes, the monetary side is great, but there's more. And so I'm glad that you did find your way through that darkness. Obviously, your childhood story has made a big impact on your caring personality, what you want to bring forth, and how you want to help others. And you were already doing that, you know, whether you consider it to be successful or not, at least having the capability to put that one action in place and stand and defend made an impact at that time. And it's really a very compassionate story. And I'm proud that you chose to be so brave in that moment, and then also how that carried you forward and the momentum. So it's definitely helping to shape what you're doing now, being resilient, being able to shift and pivot. So tell me a little bit more about this this shift that you're going through in the business for the next little while. How has COVID impacted the business?
Yeah, so COVID actually impacted it quite a bit. We went down to $0 in revenue for 1 week last year, and that was scary. Thankfully, we didn't stay there long. But yeah. I think when you say resilience, I really think I have no regrets with how my story unfolded, because I was so used to dealing with such complex issues that, to me, I mean, pivoting during a pandemic is still pretty easy. Tough, but not as tough as like life or death situations. And so exactly. I think that childhood experience really helped. And there's always something you can do with your experience and know that even if you're in a dark place, it's not going to last forever. It doesn't have to. And so what it also did was it helped me shape the mission and vision and values and value proposition of Staff Shop. I had done an exercise with a coach about a year prior to buying the business, and I didn't even know I was going to have that opportunity. By the way, I came back from vacation, and Jeff gave me the opportunity, but only gave me probably 30, 45 days, maybe tops, to get the deal done. And so luckily I had done this work prior, where faith, passion, and freedom actually are my own personal core values. Okay. And of course, their staff shop's core values, because it's totally transferable and makes sense. But I was really on a mission ever since I was a child to just really help people, especially women and children, kind of get through any kind of dark moment that they're in. And I thought about being a therapist, and for some reason I was at that age, and I looked at the salary and I looked at the type of work that I was involved, and it just wasn't making sense. And here I am now, all of a sudden, with this platform that I can use it to help thousands of people, not just one person at a time. Yeah. So very grateful for that. And I think that's why it works well, and why we're able to pivot and adjust and be nimble and adapt quickly, because the foundation is solid. The purpose and the meaning behind what we're doing it comes from a personal place. It comes from a personal experience. And I get to do that every day. I get to help people put food on the table. You know, the thousands of people that we recruit and deploy across Canada, or the clients that I'm constantly helping solve problems for, love problem solving. And so does my business partner. So we love that kind of stuff. And our value proposition, you know, is elevating people, business, and experiences. I want to add across the globe soon. But yeah, if there's anything we can do to kind of elevate people through our experience, or through that core value assessment that I was talking to you about earlier, we really want to utilize all of our service lines to do that. And the reason why I've added so many different service lines, which at some point I might have to do a rebrand because it's becoming a mouthful to fit under the staff shop name, but it's just to become more of a one-stop shop for people, all relevant to the core of what we do, which is staffing, but there's a lot of other resources there for people. If you take a look at the details of the service line. So I have to say, COVID, long story short, has been a gift. It allowed me to actually step back and work on the business as opposed to in it. I remember my mentor saying to me, you know, you have to learn how to work on the business, not so much in it. Because when I started it, I was a jack of all trades. I was doing everything, the sales, the admin, the operations, and you only go so far, you know, doing things by yourself. And it's not until I met my business partner and really kind of restructured our team and our processes and our systems properly in order to be able to scale, did I really grow. And sometimes you can't do that until a crisis happens and forces you to do it. And now, expecting a child in September, I'm forced to work on the business even more. And kind of clear the path for other people. It's really not about me anymore. It's not about Jen being the star sales rep or the star of the show. That was me for many years, but it's about how can I develop other people or help other people either internally or externally.
Yeah. Well, definitely having, I mean, a lot of times when women are coming to me, they're coming to me with, you know, two big questions. How can I be more confident? How can I have more confidence? Like, that's the essence of why I wrote my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. And going through and identifying the 40 different words and word concepts in the book that help women to have more powerful conversations helped me realize that the language is only a reflection of how we're feeling inside about ourselves. So there's obviously deeper work that I do with my coaching clients around elevating their confidence and sort of looking at that more deeply. But just having the resources, so having a steady job, obviously resources, gives people this incredible sense of security that they're coming from a place of being supported. And so thank you for the work that you're doing there in helping to employ more people. Certainly, I would be interested too in, you know, what you believe are some of the biggest contributing factors that help women in particular evolve their confidence in business. Because obviously, you are a very confident, very capable, successful woman entrepreneur. So what are your thoughts on what contributes to confidence for women?
Yeah, it's a great question. Going back to some of the work I had done to figure out what my personal core values are, which I recommend anyone does, because it's really, if you can tie anything you're doing to that, you're probably on the right track. But really speaking your truth, having that confidence to break the silence, speak the truth, be comfortable with who you are, or get comfortable with who you are if you're not. because we all have gifts. We're all here for some sort of reason on this earth, and really kind of knowing your worth and negotiating that worth when it's needed. I had mentioned to you that I had learned how to be more vulnerable and to I've always been hungry, so stay hungry and stay humble for sure. But the humility and the vulnerability and the trust came from my faith. You don't always have to just trust people and situations. You've got to trust in the bigger picture. For me, that's, you know, that's God, and Christianity is helps me kind of wrap my head around the fact that it's not just about me. It's really about serving others. So I like to say kind of serving outward and upward. And the more you do that, the more confident you become. I think the more you stay in the dark and the more you serve yourself, this is when the insecurities are there deep down. And just, you know, communicating what it is that you value and what your gifts are, and aligning with people that are on the same page as you. Sometimes, you know, who we associate with isn't really helpful. I think that saying is like, you know, you're an average of the five people you spend the most time with, so choose wisely. That is so true. And then, you know, just leverage your connections. Don't just build connections. You'd be so surprised, like the people that have helped me along the way, the random kind of people I've met through work, or, you know, strangers, clients, you know, candidates, people I've worked with internally. Everyone kind of, I like to say sometimes it takes a village to raise a child, which was me.
Yep.
It has taken a huge village and a huge team to help me be who I am today. There's no way that I could have done this on my own. So mentors are key in surrounding yourself around the right people, and just remembering that, you know, no one makes it alone, and to just give back. That's another thing that I learned most recently. The more that I give, I get back tenfold.
Absolutely. And, that's the magic of, you know, the energy of reciprocity, right? So if you always come to a conversation, this is what I teach my clients too. If you always come to a conversation with a gift and start there, then that energy opens up that reciprocity. I mean, we're all used to somebody, you know, introducing themselves and saying, hello, how are you? I'm great. How are you? I mean, that's what we're used to. So if we start with that giving attitude, it makes such a massive difference. And I know for myself that when I'm working in volunteer roles in the past, I mean, certainly as it relates to staffing, when I was interviewing, I mean, I think I interviewed and hired about 6,000 people in my career in human resources before moving into more senior roles and then eventually into executive coaching. It was this chicken and egg situation that people would very often ask me. They're in an interview and I would ask them about a particular experience level, or I don't have that experience yet. And because I don't have it, I can't get a job in it, therefore I can't get the experience, and I'm kind of stuck. And it's like, well, start volunteering, because that's a great platform where you'll get the experience that you are seeking, and you're also giving back, and you'll be on a level playing field. And some of the greatest connections that I've made, which have led to some amazing business agreements, have come through volunteering, where we're working for the greater good. And that's why, for this show, that is a key piece of the focus, is selecting women to be interviewed on the show who have that mission-inspired passion that I know that you do as well. So tell me a little bit about if there's something that you've noticed that women do or say that can diminish their authority. I'm sure the listeners would be keen to hear.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, this list is so long. I keep thinking of myself. It's like, stop doing this. So sorry. Everyone says sorry, especially in Canada. Yeah. Over apologizing all the time. You'll notice as well, and I saw this more in the corporate world, but, you know, the laughing or the needing to fill the silence to avoid awkwardness. Sometimes people will want to speak up, and if they speak up, they're kind of apologetic about it, and they're kind of like laughing about it. Be confident in what you believe, and just say it. Try not to ask for too many opinions along the way, because sometimes, you know, it kind of fuels that self-doubt. I had that for a while where I double check and triple check with people, and it's like, I already knew the answer. Just trust yourself. I think sometimes women take things personally. And my business partner and I like to say it's, you know, it's not that deep. Not everything is that deep. And so, you know, trying not to get caught up in the drama, again, going back to my corporate world experience, sometimes there can be a lot of politics involved in those types of settings, aside from your actual job, which is hard enough as it is, but playing the politics game is it's a whole other job in itself. And I remember thinking to myself, like, man, as soon as I'm able to be in a situation where I can run my own company, I will never allow this. And so it's funny because we carried that over. We have these policies at Staff Shop where it's like no secrets, no whispering, no gossiping, no politics allowed. Because that doesn't help women. I think sometimes people are also uncomfortable with change, or they're afraid of change. And, you know, to just embrace that, because that, you know, that saying, nothing lasts forever. Nothing lasts forever on the bad side of things and the good side of things. So yeah, if you're absolutely, just, you know, if you're thankful and you're grateful every day, those are things that'll kind of reframe your thinking and your mind, as you wake up and as you prepare for work. Yeah, there's a lot of good resources out here. I remember, Sally Helgeson, I think it was, she wrote a book on like how women rise, like a great, great book with a lot of cool feedback in there. Very helpful. And I remember reading this Harvard Business Review that was really good. It was called Women Find Your Voice. And this one's a good one because it shows the men's perspective, the men looking at the women and being, and providing feedback and saying, you know, speak louder. Don't allow yourself to be interrupted. Articulate your point better. Stop apologizing repeatedly. Yeah. And, you know, back up your opinions with evidence. Don't be so defensive, et cetera. So the men also observe this about women, and they're trying to encourage women to have more confidence in meetings or just in business in general. So yeah,
great, great points. And one of the other studies I mentioned in my book is talking about resonance, voice and tone and resonance. And mm-hmm. they were looking at newscasters that had deep resonant voices and spoke more slowly and were really showing that they were rock solid versus more high pitched, you know, which is, you know, women naturally have a higher pitch than men anyway. I've coached women, many women, and stop talking quite so fast and stop talking in such a high pitch because it doesn't sound authoritative. And once they were aware and they lowered their tone and slowed their sentences down, used less words, they were able to garner a lot more credibility right away. So thank you for sharing that. And the other pieces, those other great articles, some of the similar articles are quoted in my book with different, there's 175 different references. So if any of the listeners are intrigued and are thinking, well, I want to pick up a copy of Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, there is a link on my website on how to do that. There's also actually a 3-chapter download that you can actually access free by going to my website, wordswomenandwisdom.com, and hitting the red button on the left, click to download the free 3-chapter excerpt, and you'll get chapters 1, 2, and 8. And chapter 8 is when no words are even required. So how do we demonstrate our authority, our credibility, our confidence in our actions? So instead of talking about what we do, we demonstrate our credibility and expertise through the questions we ask. And the depth of the question will showcase our knowledge. Using silence, as you mentioned, the power of silence, and let the silence do the heavy lifting. The position that you take in the room, all of those types of things, how we show up, you know, just putting a jacket on adds this extra layer of credibility and authority. So those are some of the things in the 3-chapter excerpt. It's again, Words, Women, and, spelled out A-N-D, wordswomenandwisdom.com for the 3-chapter excerpt. And I'm also going to have my book available on audiobook version next month. So there's some information about that on the website as well, on the chapters available today. So as we wrap up, five key insights that you have learned that can help women to be successful in business. I would love to hear your insights, Jennifer.
So the most important one, and I learned this later on in life, unfortunately, but it's forgiveness. And again, probably tied to reconnecting with my Christian faith, but forgiveness, forgive yourself first off for maybe missing the mark or falling short, because a lot of the times we can put pressure on ourselves. And if we are too hard on ourselves, that gets in the way. But I also watched a masterclass from Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx. And she grew up around the table with her father asking her, what did you fail at today? He was really not interested in knowing what you did well at. It's what did you fail at, and really getting comfortable with failure. And so she gave us the idea to kind of get what we call oops meetings in place. And every week, every day actually of the week, someone from our team has to share some sort of oops, and we forgive them for that. And it's all about what you learn. And so there are other things that we share, like humor and gratitude and gifts, but we call it hog time. It's a good time with our team. And so forgiveness comes to mind. And also, I know I mentioned my mother at the beginning and my stepfather. I just want to make it clear. My stepfather is no longer with us. God rest his soul. But they have been forgiven. I have forgiven everyone who's ever caused me any pain, and hopefully anyone else has as well. But so important in order to move forward. And even if things are not perfect, at least you can move forward with some sort of forgiveness. So that's just want to mention that. Love my mother very much. Not trying to throw her under the bus there, but and then on the tactical side of things, on the business side, I think I mentioned it a little bit, just really make sure that your values and your vision are tied to some sort of purpose. And usually that purpose is the gifts that you've been given. We've all been given, I think, what I call spiritual gifts. You can call them whatever you want, but we've all been given gifts. And I think that if you're doing something that you were really meant to do on this earth, this is what will bring you not only success, but fulfillment.
Yeah,
because you can decide to start any business, but if it's not tied to some sort of purpose, may not work so well, maybe actually pretty stressful. Really investing also in your assets and in your team, and the people around you, whether that's your personal assets, business assets already, or the friends, family, or colleagues that you have around you. You'd be surprised when you get together how many problems you can solve together. You know, that whole idea of collaboration and no one makes it alone. Yep. I used to have a hard time trusting people, and obviously, and so that's why I figured, you know, I'm just going to do this all myself. And right. I did that for a while, and I actually got, you know, to certain levels, but it's not sustainable.
Right.
So that was a big lesson for me. And always remembering too, you know, just one day at a time. I like to say, like, one day at a time, sweet Jesus. My dad sings that song. It's an actual song, because it's tied to never giving up. That's probably the most important thing. You'll have some really bad days where you just feel like giving up. And if you just hang on like that, tomorrow's another day. And it's usually gets better and better over time. And maybe it goes up and down, but just really never giving up has been the key. There's been a couple times in my life where I was like, oh, I'm like, I can't do this, or I'm not worthy of this. Luckily at the time I had some people kind of remind me, yes, you are, but you can remind yourself. And yeah, just giving up's just not an option. And then
just
I would
show up. Just show up.
Show up. Trust me, it'll work out. Yeah. You know, and that ties into something my stepmom says. She's like, Jen, don't let anyone steal your peace. If I get agitated about anything, she's on to me. She's like, don't let anyone steal your peace. And so I've been saying that these days, just don't let anyone or anything steal your peace. That is your choice. If you allow that, you're allowing yourself to have a crappy day. And yeah, just the last thing I say would be, you know, stay connected to successful people, women with good hearts. That's really important. The people that you surround yourself with, and the people that are your champions along the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was actually how we met, through the Women of Inspiration, awards, I'm a 2018 award recipient for the work I've been doing around mentorship for women. And then that's where we connected through Universal Women's Network. And surrounding yourself with the right people. I was actually just on another session with Christopher Kai this morning. And one of his tests was to look in your phone and see if the people that you're trying to reach are actually the people who are in your phone. And if you're trying to, I work with six-figure women entrepreneurs with a social enterprise mission, how many of those come up when I look at my phone? And that's one sort of self-assessment that you can do. I love what you're sharing about the mission and the values. I always used to say when I was working with hiring managers, hire for values first, then train on skills if you need to. Because if I think it's white and you think it's black, we are never going to agree in the middle that it's gray. We're always going to have this friction. And that's not where you have longevity for hiring staff. And if you have a lot of turnover, it costs obviously a lot of money. So that is the connection. That is business. So if you are looking to staff up, I highly recommend that you connect with Jennifer at Staff Shop. If you're intrigued to learn more about this topic of values, you can access her CVI.
Yeah, the CVI. Just a couple of gifts, actually. The best way to reach me, I mean, you could just email info@staffshop.ca or find me on LinkedIn, Jennifer Menard Shand. In terms of gifts, I mean, check out our blog, staffshop.ca. The blog is a combination of my personal stories or experiences as a business. They're designed to help people, kind of like this conversation. And the second thing is our core value assessment. It's a really, really special kind of 5-minute assessment that only assesses people's values. So what they value most. And when we know that, we can place them in the right position that naturally feeds those core value energies. And that's how people are happy and performing long-term. It's also how they can solve conflicts. And so that's a free assessment. You could get it from our site. I'm happy to go over results. I'm happy to send information for free. And feel free to pass it on to friends and family as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for that generous gift. And if you're listening to this as an entrepreneur, the Core Values Index obviously is a great tool for hiring and matching. If you're listening as an entrepreneur and say, well, can I use values also to help connect with more of the right kind of clients? I also have a values-based tool, which you can find on my website, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, which is also able to gift you a $99 value report, and you can access the personality science behind that. And I'm happy to share more about that one-on-one. So this has been fascinating. I am so honored that you chose to share your story on the Words, Women and Wisdom radio show. And secondly, that you've been able to gift such wisdom nuggets to the listeners. So thank you for sharing. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing to uplift the spirit of humanity, and also the compassionate side of the work that you're doing. I know that there are also some philanthropic endeavors that you are immersed in as well. So thank you for donating your time in that area. It's been a pleasure to be interviewing you. Any last words or gems that you want to share?
No, thank you so much, Yvonne. It's been great. And anything I can do to nurture people or problems or situations is really what I was, what I feel like I'm here for. So I'm very happy to be doing this work and appreciate the time.
Okay. Well, let's keep in touch and have a beautiful day. And thank you for, again, the heart that you're bringing to the world of staffing in particular, the leadership you're bringing to women working in the diverse fields, and being a proud woman-owned business, because we appreciate you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And good on you as well for the great work you're doing.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.